Okay. Morning. Today we start Daf Sadi Beis. We're on the bottom of Sadi Aleph Amud Beis. We're 91B. We had the good fortune, the good pleasure yesterday of starting the 10th parak of Shabbos. And we are returned back to the topic of Hotzah, of carrying on Shabbos. We learned in the first Mishnah that in terms of Shiurim, so there are Shiurim, there are minimum requirements, minimum amounts in order to be Chayv, Karban Chatos for the Malach of Hotzah. But there are people, however, who can assign a value to something which is less than a normal shear, and it's an official assignment that is going to be considered a designation. And that was the first mission that we learned together in the 10th parak of Shabbos. And then yesterday we went to move on to the next Mishnah, and then this Mishnah had two points to make. The first point that this Mishnah made was regarding an iskufa threshold that existed between your house and the Rishus HaRabim. And this iskufa, for the purposes of our discussion, let's say it's a Carmelis. So that means it's not a Rishus HaRabim, it's not a Rishus HaYachid, it's Minator, it's nothing, but Midrabanan, it has a value, it has an assignment, it's a Carmelis. And Midrabanan, you're not allowed to carry from a Rishus HaRabim to a Carmelis, you're not allowed to carry from a Rishus HaYachid to a Carmelis. And what you do is, you take the item outside, you put it down on the Iskufa, and then you pick it up and you bring it out into the Rishus HaRabim. So the Mishnah taught us that you're going to be potter, you're going to be exempt. Why? Because it stopped in the Karmelis. The Gemara noted yesterday, but that of course means that if you didn't stop on the Iskufa and you went directly from your house into the Rishus HaRabim, so you're going to be chayv, even though you walked through a Karmelis. You're still nevertheless going to be chayv. The Gemara points out that's true. There is a Tana who would not agree to that, but that Tana is Ben Azai. And the reason why he wouldn't agree to that, explained the Gemara yesterday, is because every step that you would take according to Ben Azai is a new Hanacha and a new Akira. Okay, very good. Then the Gemara went on to the next part of the Mishnah, which we saw yesterday. And that Mishnah talked about taking out a basket, and the basket had fruit in it. And the question basically becomes a very fundamental question in terms of how to look at the basket. Is that basket now going to unify all the items inside? This is the Gemara's terminology of eged kli shmei eged. Or no, the basket just simply holds all the items, but the items are considered, each one of them, still an independent unit. So to be specific, the Gemara discussed the following scenario yesterday. I take the basket and I put it at the edge, right on the border between the Rishus HaYach and the Rishus HaRabim. And let's make this even more dramatic. Let's even put most of it outside on the Rishus HaRabim. So I picked it up in the Rishus HaYach in my house, and I put it right on the border of the Rishus HaRabim. And let's even say most of it now is situated in the Rishus HaRabim. Only a small portion of it is still inside the house. So the Gemara now wonders whether or not you're going to be chayv on the malach of Hotzah, and this translated into a machlokus between the Amoraim. So we're going to see is over the course of this morning, the beginning of this morning, it's a machlokus amongst the Amoraim in Eretz Yisrael, and it's going to be a machlokus amongst the Amoraim in Bavel as well. This is going to be a major debate. So what we'll do now is we're going to start again from the beginning of this sugya. We're in the middle of Sadi Alpha Mudbeis, and we start Amar Chizkiya. Now, Chizkiya starts off with the following position. Our mission that describes the kupa, the basket filled with fruit, that's talking about where it's cucumbers, meaning it's long. And the cucumbers are placed in the basket lengthwise. So that means then that when I take the most of the basket outside and leave some of the basket inside, that means not only some of the basket's inside, but some of the cucumbers are inside as well. And because that's so you're going to be put, you're going to be exempt, because a transfer means a full transfer. However, continues Chizkiya, if the contents of the basket was chardal, mustard seeds, and I put the basket down, and some of the basket's outside, so that means that some of the mustard seeds made a full transfer from Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim, and so therefore, you're going to be chayev. Alma kasavar, eged kli lo shmei eged. So how does Chizkiya review the basket? He doesn't view the basket. Eged kli lo shmei eged. That the binding of the basket is not considered a binding. Okay, it's basically the basket is something that holds the fruit, but it doesn't define the fruit. It doesn't unify the fruit. Rav Yochanan Amar Filim Alei Chardal Potter, and Rav Yochanan disagrees. No, even if it's filled with mustard seeds, you're going to be Potter. Amar Kesav Eged Chlish VeEged, because according to Rav Yochanan, what happens is that once all those mustard seeds are in a basket, that basket unifies the mustard seeds, and so therefore now it's not considered individual little seeds, but rather it's considered one total entity, one singular entity, and that means according to Rav Yochanan that in order to be Chayev, you must take the entire basket and transfer it outside. Now, noted by the Amor Rabbi Zera, how does our Mishnah feel on this issue? You read the Mishnah carefully, you try to read the Mishnah carefully, you don't really get a good sense. The Gemara explains why. Because our Mishnah, if you read it carefully, says, until you take out the kupa, that's the last line of the Mishnah. Time to chol kupa ha kol aperos pater. That means that the entire kupa must go outside. What if all the fruit went outside? You're going to be exempt. Amakas avregi klish meyegin. Well, that sounds like Rav Yochanan, where the kli is a binding agent. It unifies the entire basket, and you're only going to be chayv when you take the entire basket outside. Okay, so. Rav Yochanan lo deka. So that would be our Mishnah supporting Rav Yochanan. But then Rabbi Zera notes, but then read on in the Mishnah, or go back in the Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, if the majority of the fruit is outside, time of the Rav Peros. If all the fruit is outside, even though some of the kupa is still inside, you're going to be chayev. Well, that's a point for Chizkia, because the basket doesn't have to be entirely outside. As long as the fruit is outside, you're going to be chayef. So, elakasha. So it's difficult, meaning when I read the Mishnah doesn't sound exactly like Rav Yochanan, nor does the Mishnah sound exactly like Chizkia. So, Chizkia mitarets l'tame, Rav Yochanan mitarets l'tame. So, each Amara is going to attack the Mishnah based on their position. Chizkia mitarets l'tame, achios, it's kol ha-kupa, ba-med v'ramamur, ba-kupa malaya kishuin v'diluin. Yeah, you have to take the whole kupa out. That's when it's filled with cucumbers lengthwise. However, if the contents of the kupa is mustard seeds, and once I take out some of the kupa, it's ki'ilu, it's as if I took out the entire basket, which means I'm going to be chayav. And Rav Yochanan Tarz Latami, Afa Pisha, Rav Peros Bechutz, Velo, Rav Peros Bevada, Afilu Kol Peros, Pater. Now, the Mishnah does say Rav Peros, but what Rav Yochanan will say in his defense is, even if you take all the fruit outside, achiotis kol akupa, you're not going to be chayv until you take out the entirety of the kupa. Fine. So now basically what we have over here is a machlokas between Chizkia and Rav Yochanan. How do we view the kli that's holding the fruit? Is it now unify and turn it into one singular entity? And therefore you're only going to be chayv when I take out the entire basket? That's the position of Eged Kli Shmei Eged. That's the position of Rav Yochanan, or no? The basket is just simply holding the fruit. But once I take some of the basket outside, and I have small fruit inside, or mustard seeds, as the Gemara gives the example of, and some of those mustard seeds now have totally transferred from Rishas Harab Ruyachid to Rishas Harab, and I'm going to be Chayev. And that's the position of Eged Kli Lo Shmei Eged, and that's the position of Chizkia. Okay, Meisve. The Gemara challenges Amotzi Kupas HaRochlin Menas Nalais Kufa HaChitzona. If I take out a Kupas HaRochlin, a spice basket, various spices are in this basket. Alpha Pisharov Mina Mechutz Pater Achiosi is called a Kupa. This Brisa teaches us that you're only going to be Chayv when the entire basket has been transferred outside. Fine. This sounds supportive of Rabbi Yochanan. Now, at this point, it just simply describes it as a spice basket. And we're thinking these are just crushed spices that are in this basket. And even though some of the spices now have made a full transfer, but you're not going to be chayv until the entire basket has been transferred outside. And it sounds like this supports Rav Yochanan, and it's a kash against Chizkia. So Chizkia will say, look, if I want to defend my position, I could do so very easily. The spices over here are long stems, and they are placed lengthwise in the basket. And the reason why you're not chayv is because the stems themselves have not made the full transfer from Rishos Yachid to Rishos Arabim. Okay. Mesav Rabbi Bi Bar Abaye. Another kasha based on a brisa. This is a popular brisa. This one comes up a number of times throughout Chas because contained in this brisa are a lot of interesting ideas. We know in in halacha, so you can't get punished twice for a singular act. Which punishment are you going to receive? So we have a general rule of kamlei b'derabimine, that you're going to get the harsher of the punishment. So in one act, let's say I incur a death penalty and I also incur a monetary liability as well. So what do we say about the monetary liability? I get a pass. Okay, I'm good. Well, when I say I'm good, by the way, it's only because... I'm looking right now at the death sentence. Now, to be fair and honest, even if I don't actually get the death penalty, meaning even if, let's say, it's shogig, for example, and I don't actually get the death penalty, but still, though, that's going to exempt, create a patur on the monetary liability as well. Is there an ethical obligation to pay the money that I owe? Absolutely. But min ha-Torah, min ha-Din, according to the strict letter of the law, am I obligated to pay? No, I'm not obligated to pay. So let's think of an example. We don't have to think. Let's read an example in the Gemara where this liability is incurred simultaneously. Hagonif kis b'Shabbos, so I'm a thief and I steal on Shabbos. Good. So, and anyway, Shabbos have a lot of time, a lot of spare time to do so. And so I go into someone's house and I steal on Shabbos. So chayav, shekvarn is chayav b'gneva, karm sheyavali day iser Shabbos. So when I pick up the item now, I have acquired the item, meaning at that point in time, strictly speaking, legally speaking, I've made a kinyan on the item. But I haven't left the house yet. And so when do I incur the death penalty for hotzah on Shabbos? That's only when I leave the house. Okay, good. So there, we don't say kimle b'derabimine, because kimle b'derabimine only works, the exemption only works when the two events happen concurrently, simultaneously. So here, the first case illustrating this brisa will not work. But now we move on to the second case of the brisa. Yemegar v'yotze potter, share iser geneva v'iser Shabbos b'ayim ke'echad. But let's say I drag the item outside. So in other words, I never pick up the item. Now, to be a thief, obviously, my intention is to steal it, but we are in halacha right now. So we're not interested in the person's intent. We're talking about, legally speaking, strictly speaking, when did he create a kinyan? When did he make a kinyan on that item? So if he's dragging the item, that in of itself does not create a kinyan. What creates a kinyan is moving it from one domain to another domain. Now, it happens to be that in Hilchos Shabbos, we're going to have basically the same parameters. When do you violate Hotzah on Shabbos? When you move it from one domain to another domain. Now, if you want to get a little more technical, which we're learning Gemara, by the way, that's what we do for a living. So if you want to get a little more technical, even when I drag it from one domain to another domain, in terms of kinyanim, in terms of making an acquisition, so dragging something into Rishus HaRabim is not really enough. Why? Because you don't make kinyanim in Rishus HaRabim. That's a public domain. It's not my property. That's public property. In order to make a kinyan in Rishus HaRabim, I have to pick the item up. So Rashi notes this, and Rashi quotes the Gemara in Ksuvos, and the Gemara in Ksuvos says that, well, what you did is you dragged it from the house into the, not the street, but into the sidewalk, what's called Sidei Rishus HaRabim. But now we get very technical, because Sidei Rishus HaRabim, vis-a-vis kinyanim, you can make a kinyan in Sidei Rishus HaRabim, but in terms of Hotzah and Shabbos, Sidei Rishus HaRabim is viewed as part of the street, and therefore you'd be chayv on the melacha of Hotzah. Okay, but we're really getting very technical right now. Let's just focus right now on the basic point that I'm stealing a purse on Shabbos, and I need to make a transfer from the house out to the street, and I'm dragging it outside. Now, what we're looking for over here is the simultaneous concurrence of the kinyan on the purse and the malacha of hotzah. So, Meghaya Megarvi, Yotzei Pater Share, Isser Geneva, Visser Shabbos, Baim Ke'echad. Here now, we have a case, says the Braisa, where it is simultaneous. And because it's simultaneous, I'm not going to be obligated to have to pay. I'm going to get an exemption from paying, because at the same time that I made the Kinyan Geneva, I also incurred the death penalty for hotzah on Shabbos. Okay, now, now the Gemara brings this case over here because of our discussion. Meaning, what are we interested in? What am I, as a thief, what do I care about? The purse? The purse is nice. I care about the money inside the purse. That's really what interests me. So, eged klishmei eged. So, kadim le iser geneva le iser Shabbos. So, in other words, once I carry the purse outside, while it's still somewhere in between the Rishus Hayach and Rishus Harabim, I now have allowed myself access to the money inside. Meaning, let's assume their coins inside. So once the opening of the purse now has crossed over the border between the house and the Rishus Harabim, so now, and the opening of the purse now is exposed to me, I've made a kinyan on that item. But in terms of Hotsah for Shabbos, I'm not going to be chayav until the entire purse makes that transfer from the Rishus Hayachid into Rishus Harabim. That is, of course, if you hold like Rav Yochanan, where Eged Kli Shmei Eged. So now, the Gemara is basically asking, according to Rav Yochanan, here's the problem. You don't have the concurrent liability of being a thief in Hotsah and Shabbos. The Gemara now, in defense of Rav Yochanan, says, well, let's turn the purse around. Meaning, perhaps the case in the Brice is talking about where I'm extracting the purse, but not from the opening, but rather from the closed end of the purse. And now, watch as I take the purse outside, so I'm not making the kinyan, and I'm not violating Hotsah, until the entire purse now crosses over the threshold, where now the opening is here, and now I can access the money inside, and I also violate the Malacha of Hotsah. So the Gemara says, Vayika makam chalama. So the Gemara says, even when I'm taking the purse, not open side out first, but rather the back side out first, can't I just simply tear open the back side in order to access the money? And apparently, this could be done really easily. So de'i bai mafkele v'shakil. So and I could just simply rip it open from the back end and take the money outside. So the Gemara says ben nascha. So the Gemara says, well, maybe what you're stealing over here, again, the Brisa doesn't say any of this, but we're trying to defend Rav Yochanan, so if we're going to give a little bit of a nukimta in the Brisa, in order to defend Rav Yochanan, so Shalom Yisrael. So maybe the purse over here is not talking about where there are coins inside the purse, but maybe there are long bars, right? Like Fort Knox. And so therefore, when I'm stealing the purse, it's kind of like the cucumbers we described a couple of minutes ago, where it's not just that the purse has not been transferred outside, it's also the gold bars inside have also not made the full transfer. And so therefore, I am not a ganav until the entire purse is taken outside. I am not a mechal Shabbos until the entire purse is taken outside. So suggests the Gemara in defense of Rav Yochanan. The Gemara says, Vahika shnatzin. So the Gemara says, what about the purse strings? The drawstrings of the purse, which kind of are, even after I've taken the whole purse outside, aren't they dragging still inside the house? And according to Rav Yochanan, Eged Kli Shmei Eged, so even those drawstrings that are still inside make it so that the purse now has not fully transferred until the drawstrings themselves are also outside as well. So the Gemara says, Agide Megavai, Deleka, I'm sorry. Vishaki Vishnatsin Agida Megavai Daleka Shnatsin Vibaisema de Isle Makarche Ilave. Gemara gives one of two answers. Well, the first answer of the Gemara is this particular purse doesn't have drawstrings. Second answer is drawstrings are kinda looped up, wrapped around the purse, and so therefore don't worry about these drawstrings. Okay. It is interesting, however, that the Gemara assumes that the drawstrings are so part and parcel of the purse that the purse itself has not made a transfer until even the purse strings are outside as well. Okay, anyway, the Gemara now has successfully defended Rav Yochanan, and we move on. Where are we? Where we started. Machlok is between Chizkiah and Rav Yochanan, whether or not Eged Kli Shmei Eged. Whether when you have various items inside one utensil, whether that kli is considered a unifying entity. And so therefore everything inside the kli is considered really one item. Rav Yochanan says Eged Kli Shmei Eged. Chizkiah says Eged Kli Lav Shmei Eged. And now that was all the Amoraim and Eretz Yisrael. And now we move to Bavel. Same machlokas. V'chein amarava lo shanu ala b'kupa malei kishum v'dilu nava malei chardal chayav. The Gemara originally quotes Rava saying that you're going to be chayav if it's filled with mustard seeds. Because even though the entire kli has not made the transfer, but whatever mustard seeds went over the border did make the transfer. And what about the fact that it's in a kli? So right now, as Rava is being presented to us, Rava would say, so what? meaning the kli is not a unifier. It doesn't bind. It's not a binding agent. Now, Abaye disagrees and says, no, even if it's filled with mustard seeds, you're going to be exempt until the entire kli crosses over from the house to the outside. Okay, now, that's how the positions are originally presented to us. Kam Abaye b'shita say de Rava, and kam Rava b'shita say de Abaye. And then as the issue was further discussed and debated in the Beis Medrash, so both Abaye and Rava switched their position. So now, hopefully everyone is thoroughly confused. So Rava now is of the opinion that Eged Kli is Shmei Eged, and Abaye now is of the opinion that Eged Kli lav Shmei Eged. Now, and how does the Gemara know this? The Gemara just simply has a Masora tradition that this is so. So, good. The Rami Dabaye Dabaye Rami Darava Darava De Itmar. Now the Gemara notes, this becomes difficult for the following reason. Hamotzi Peres L'Rishus HaRabim. Let's say I transfer fruit into the Rishus HaRabim. Abaye Amar Biyad Chayev. So Abaye says that if I take it out with my hand, I'm going to be Chayev. That means that I have the fruit. Let's say right now, this is my house, and this desk would represent the Rishus HaRabim. And now what do? Is I take it, and I just simply, with my hand, just move it outside. I still stay inside the house. But my hand with the fruit now is outside, so Abaye says you're going to be Chayev. Okay. Immediately, by the way, that should bother you, because I don't know if you remember this. This takes us back to day one of Masechta Shabbos. Remember, we talked about the Ani and the Asher. Asher's in the house, Ani's outside the house. And we said that for the Asher to take his hand and bring it outside, that's not a transfer in Shabbos. If he deposits it into the hand of the Ani, that's a transfer. But just to bring your hand outside, that's not enough. Okay, the Gemara is going to be bothered by that in just a moment. However, we're focusing on the following. Bekli, Pater. But if I take it out in the Kli, I'm going to be Pater. Rava Amar, Biyad Pater, Bekli Chayev. And Rava says just the opposite. With your hand, you're going to be exempt, and with the Kli, you're going to be Chayev. So the Gemara says, Epoch. So the Gemara says, okay, what we're going to have to do now is take this last machlokus between Abaye and Rava and flip it, in order so that now it conforms to the established positions of Abaye and Rava. Meaning, as Tosfos points out, Kimle Lahashas. Meaning, the Gemara knows what Abaye and Rava's final position is, so we'll take whatever machlokas we heard and just simply say, look, that was their debate in the early stages of their debate. But they finally came to rest on their respective positions, so we're going to flip the Braisa around. Fine. Now, the Gemara says, wait, hold on one second. Even when we flip everything around, somebody's of the opinion, and now it comes out that Rava's of the opinion, that if I take fruit out in my hand, I'm going to be chayav. Meaning, all I did was hold the fruit in my hand and bring the fruit outside, and Rava's now going to tell you that you're going to be chayav. The Hatanan, the Gemara says, what about the first thing we learned in the Masechta? Pasha Balabai says, Yadala Chosvenatal, Ani Mitocha Oshanatal, Lesocha Vihichnis, Shneim Peturim. Our Mishnah taught us, the first Mishnah of the Masechta, that when an Ani and an Asher make a transfer, and the Asher takes his hand, and there's something in his hand, and he brings it outside, and he doesn't deposit, he just simply brings it outside, at that stage, he's not liable for Hotzah on Shabbos. So how can we have anyone saying over here, Abaye or Rava, who it doesn't matter which one, how can anybody say that a transfer with an item in your hand and all you did is just simply move your hand outside, how can anyone say you're going to be chayev? Hasam lamala migimel, hacha lamata migimel. The Gemara says, look, the difference is as follows. Over there in that first Mishnah, in order to be chayev on the malach of Otsa, you need an akira, you need a hanacha. You need to pick the item up, you need to put the item down. So when I take my hand and I bring it outside, I didn't put it down. So therefore we're missing a basic component of Otsah, and that is the Hanacha. Over here, however, by me taking my hand outside, our discussion over here is where my hand is within 3 tefachim of the ground. It's pretty low to the ground. Tefach is about 4 inches, you're within a foot of the ground. And the Gemara says over here is that your hand now is within 3 tefachim of the ground. We have a principle known as lavud, once something was in three tefachim of the ground, it's considered now it's as if it's on the ground itself, and therefore you're going to be chayiv. And so now the truth of the matter is that now that we're saying that our case is within three tefachim of the ground, you got to defend the other position. What's the other position that says that when your hand is within three tefachim of the ground, you're not going to be chayiv, you're going to be patur? Which, as we have it right now, that's a bias position. So why should you be patur? So maybe you'll say something along the lines of, well, if it's still in your hand and it's suspended in the air, even though we have a halachic reality of lavud, but still when all is said and done, it's not munach, it's not actually placed on the ground itself, you'll say something along those lines. Okay. And we continue. Just simply to wrap it up now, what we have in our Gemara is a machlokas of how to view a kli when there are multiple items on the kli. Is it unify the items on the kli? Does it not unify the items on the kli? And the answer is it's a machlokas. It's a machlokas in Eretz Yisrael between Chizkiah and Rav Yochanan. It's a machlokas in Bavel between Rava and Abaye. Normally we say machlokas between Abaye and Rava. Who is the victor of the debate? Not the victor. That's not a good way to say it. Who do we accept as a halacha? So we accept the halacha as Rava. So now, if assuming that Rava, and remember the Gemara Epoch, the Gemara flipped around the Shita, so it comes out now that according to Rava, Eged Kli, right, the Eged Kli is, the line of Amaleim, Eged Kli Shmei Eged, right. Right, it unifies. Now let's go to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so that's Rava's position. So a kli unifies. Now go to Eretz Yisrael and Rav Yochanan and Chizkiah. What's Rav Yochanan's position? Rav Yochanan's position is, and there's no flipping over here, so I don't have to think anything through. Eged kli shmei eged. So it kind of works out good. Meaning now we have Rav Yochanan. Normally the halacha falls like Rav Yochanan. In Bavel, normally halacha falls like Rava. So it would seem like the sound conclusion would be Eged Kli Shmei Eged. That putting various items in a basket does in fact unify those items. And so therefore in Shabbos, we do not have a liability until the entire basket makes the transfer from the Rishos HaYachid to the Rishos HaRabim.
So okay.
Yeah, in other words, it comes out that in our discussion, it comes out that we're going to be Mako. Right. Hamotzi bein b'yamina bein b'smala b'tocheko al k'tefav chayev. Now, our general rule, and this is not just true by hotza, it's true by all malachas, but we're discussing in the context of hotza'ah. In order to be chayev on the malach of hotza'ah, you have to do it in a normal manner. It's got to be normative practice. We spoke about this just a couple of days ago in terms of shiurim. You have to carry something which is a normal shiur. Here now we're talking about an actual method of carrying. You got to carry in the normal way, in your right hand, in your left hand, in your lap. Now, a lap, I have such a hard time understanding what that means, because usually when you stand up, you lose your lap. So over here, lap, maybe a lap, I don't know. hard for me to understand fully what the visual is about carrying something in your lap. I don't fully understand that, or on your shoulder. But anyway, though, carrying something in your right hand, your left hand, your lap, or your shoulder are considered usual ways of carrying. Okay. Now, how do we know that these are usual ways of carrying? So the simple answer to that question is, we know. Meaning, take a look around. If you take a look at Rashi, it's an interesting Rashi. So Rashi says, "Bakatef yisau." I'm sorry. Let me first read a couple more words of the Mishnah, and then I'll go to Rashi. Shekein masa b'nei kahas. You know, all the malachas that we know is because this is how it was done in the Mishkan, and notably, carrying was done in the Mishkan when they would have to transfer the beams, the klei hamishkan. So all the accoutrements of the Mishkan were carried, and so therefore, this is how kahat did it. Now Rashi over here notes. Now let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi over here notes in the Mishnah b'katef yisau. It says regarding kahat, they carried it on their shoulders. They put poles through the mizbeach, through the aron. In other words, through all large items of the Mishkan, and then you would have four levim, each one standing on one side of the pole. And that's how they would carry these items, ba'katef yisau, using their shoulders. But that only explains shoulders. What about right hand? What about left hand? What about your lap? So Rashi goes on to write, V'yamin u'smol v'cheik, orech ara. So Rashi says, look, I don't need a pasuk over there. That's just simply normal practice of how we carry. V'shem Rabbeinu Yitzchak bar Yehuda matzasi shamer b'shem Rav Hai, shemeforce b'ashas Yerushalmi. And now Rashi notes that I have a tradition from my Rebbe, who received a tradition from Rav Hai Gon, who has quoted a Talmud Yerushalmi. Ufkudas alazer ben Aaron a kohen shemen amor uktaris asamim uminchas atamid v'shemen hamishcha. Four items described by Elazar ben Aaron. Shemen echad b'yamin v'shemen echad b'smol. The two jugs of oil, one is carrying in his right hand, one is carrying in his left hand. V'aktoris b'cheko, the ktoris is being held in his lap. Again, I gotta get it.
I think it's wrapped around.
Maybe, right, like something that's like swaddling it. Okay, maybe. V'achavitim b'katef, and the chavitim, the minchas chavitim is held on his shoulder. So in other words, the Yerushalmi cites a source in Chumash that actually, it's a drush, but it's a source in Chumash that actually alludes to all four different methods of carrying. Right hand, left hand, lap, and shoulder. Okay. Either way, those are the normal methods of carrying. And what's considered abnormal? Kila achar yado, holding something on the back of your hand. Biraglo, carrying something with your foot. Bifiv, carrying something in your mouth. Umarpeko. Now, marpeko can either mean your armpit or it can mean the inside of your elbow. Either way, it's abnormal. Biazno, carrying something in your ear. Uvisaro, carrying something in your hair. Ubipunda, so carrying something in your money belt. Upia lamata. Now, a money belt is a normal way of carrying things, but the opening to the money belt is hanging down. And you don't normally, if you're going to be wearing your money belt, your hollowed money belt, you're not going to have pia lamata. In other words, the normal way to carry it would be pia lamala. Bein putaso lechaluko, between your money belt and your shirt. Uvisfas chaluko, the hem of the shirt. Bimina lo, bisande lo, carrying something in your shoe or in your sandal. All these are considered unusual, abnormal. And so therefore you're not going to be chayv because it is kila achar yad. It's done so in an unusual way. Now we started our discussion over here with a very interesting discussion about the following. I've told you a number of times, and we've discussed this the first week of the Masechta, from Daf Beis to Daf Chaf to Daf Ches, that a Rishus HaRabim has a ceiling, has a halachic ceiling. A Rishus HaRabim legally only goes up 10 tefachim high. It's really not high at all. Meaning, this table over here is approximately 10 tefachim in the air. Okay? 30 to 40 inches, somewhere around 3 feet. Okay? The Rishus HaRabim, anything higher than that is not a Rishus HaRabim. Do you remember? We talked about, and we're going to talk about this in the 11th parak as well. If I throw an item, and it lands above 10 tefachim, so let's say like a sticky date, and I throw it against the wall, and it went 4 amos in the Rishus HaRabim, but it landed above 10 tefachim. I did not violate the malacha of being mavid amos in the Rishus HaRabim, because it landed above 10 tefachim. And so therefore, I'm not going to be chayav. Good. And now, says the Gemara, Amar of Elazar, Motzi Masu L'mala Me'asar, tefachim chayav, that when I carry an item, and I'm holding it above, suspended above 10 tefachim, I'm going to be chayav shekei masa b'nei kahas. Because we know that when the tribe of Kahat, I know that they're from the tribe of Levi, but when the Kahat were carrying, they were suspending items above 10 tefachim. Now, the simplest way to understand this is very simple, I think. Okay, and obviously you could disagree. But when I'm carrying something, and I'm standing, and the item that I'm carrying, let's say I'm holding it in the air, so I'm holding it above 10 tefachim, so I can't claim exemption because, look, it's above 10 tefachim. I'm walking in the Rishus HaRabim, meaning a portion of my body, right, my feet up to my, well, I'm vertically challenged, so in other words, like, we're talking up to my, well, you know, up to my waist, but in other words, I'm walking in the Rishus HaRabim, so I'm grounded in the Rishus HaRabim. So even the item that I'm holding, and I'm, quote-unquote, I'm suspending it above, but it can't negate the fact that I'm standing in the Rishus HaRabim itself. The item is also, quote-unquote, in the Rishus HaRabim, even though it's above the Rishus HaRabim. Right? I think that's a simple way to understand it.
But what if you go from private to public without stopping and make another private?
Well, if you don't stop, so you're not going to be chayv for the simple reason that you didn't do a hanacha. Every hotzah requires a hanacha. So the moment I stop, so now I'm grounded. And anything I'm holding, even though the item itself is above 10 tefachim, is also grounded into the Rishus HaRabim.
But that's
not a 10 tefachim issue. That's just simply you need a hanacha. A hanacha is one of the basic requirements. Benazai. You agreed.
So if you go from private to public, but not stopping to another private, no problems.
No problems, minatora. Midarabanan, that would be awesome, but minatora, you're right. That would be fine. So amotzi masu lamala me'asar tachem chayv shkei masu b'nei kasu minalan. And now the Gemara wants to know, where exactly do we see this by b'nei kahas, that they carried something, and whatever they were carrying was elevated above that tent fachim ceiling of the Rishus HaRabim. So the Gemara is going to give a number of very interesting arguments. Now, first of all, we'll start off with the fact that the Mizbeach is 10 Amos tall. Now, we know that the Amudim of the Mishkan were 10 Amos tall, the Torah says so. So, and the Mizbeach itself was also the same height. Now, Rashi, of course, notes that if you look in Chumash, you're not going to get that sense from Chumash. The Torah describes the Mizbeach as only being 3 Amos high. But okay, but we start off with the assumption that the Mizbeach is 10 Amos high. Vayifro says, Ha'ol ala Mishkan va'amarav Moshe Rabbeinu Parshu. Now, do you know how the Mishkan basically worked? Every one of the beams of the Mishkan, the vertical height of the beams was 10 Amos. And we also have a tradition, a Mesorah, that Moshe himself, before I get to that. And what created the ceiling of the Mishkan? So it was not wood. It was not a wood ceiling. But rather, it was a big tablecloth made up of various layers of animal hide and and fabric and wool fabric. All it was like a tent. Okay, good. And that's all described in the Torah. Now, how was the tablecloth spread over the Mishkan? So this, we have a Masorah, we have a tradition. Moshe did so. Now, how did Moshe do so? The Amarav, Moshe Rabbeinu Parshu, Mikana Talami, Govan Shalavim, Eser Amos. And the Gemara now makes the following assumption. Moshe spread it over because Moshe was tall. The Gemara here describes Moshe being 10 Amos tall. Okay. He would make an excellent center. Needless to say, that would put him somewhere in the range of 15 to 20 feet tall. Okay, I understand. We don't, right? Even our giants are not that giant. But the Gemara says we have such a tradition, and so Moshe was easily able to spread the cloth over the top of the Mishkan. Now, just I say this as an interesting aside. The average height of a person, I'm not talking now. I don't care what it is now. I mean, I do care, but I'm saying, in other words, in the time of the Mishnah and the Gemara, the average height of a person in terms of Amos?
4'7 or 4'5.
Right? You know this? 3 Amos.
Wow.
3 Amos.
That's still tall. That's 6 feet.
Again, an Amos is somewhere in the range of a foot and a half to 2 feet. Okay, so you're right. Okay, in that time. So 3 Amos, with the head, without the head, so somewhere in the recesses of my mind, I remember that's somewhat of a debate. Okay, but anyway, so even in terms of the times of the Chumash, having Moshe 10 Amos tall when the average person was 3 Amos tall, obviously he was beyond heads and shoulders taller than everybody else. Okay, now, the Gemara here now makes the following assumption. Moshe is 10 Amos tall, that's not an assumption, that the Gemara assumes is a fact. Now, Moshe is from the tribe of Levi, so if Moshe is 10 Amos tall, so mom and dad, also 10 Amos tall, meaning the Gemara assumes all of Shevet Levi were 10 Amos tall. Okay? It was in the genes. So, v'gemir d'choltuna d'midle b'mutos tilsa mila'el u'tre tilsa matachis. Now, right, everyone's putting all these assumptions together. Now, here we have the following. When I carry something, and I want a nice distribution of the weight, and especially if it's a large item. So proper carrying means that a third of the item is going to be above my head, and two-thirds of it is going to be below my head. Now let's put all the facts together. Okay, we were just given a lot of pieces of information. You put it all together, here's the result that it yields. Levim were 10 amas tall. They were carrying the Mizbech was 10 amas tall. Proper carrying of such a heavy item would mean that a third of it would be above their head and two-thirds of it would be below. Well, if two-thirds of it is going to be below, so that means that this 10 amma Mizbeach, 6 and two-thirds of it is going to be below their head. But if 6 and two-thirds of it is going to be below their head, it's obviously suspended in air. And how much airspace are we talking about from the bottom of Mizbeach to the floor as they're carrying it? So it's going to be 3 1/3. 3 1/3 ammas. Now, right, that's important. 3 1/3 ammas. So 3 1/3 ammas now is the amount. So the Mizbeach that they're carrying now is going to be well above the 10 tefach ceiling of the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. And yet, that's the entire source of carrying on Shabbos. So once we put all those pieces of information together, and granted we made some assumptions in doing so, but once we put all this information together, you see that when I carry something, even though the item is suspended above 10 tefachim, you're still going to be chayiv. That is now approach number one of the Gemara. Ishtakech tahave midle tuve. Okay, good. Argument number two of the Gemara. Ibai seimami aron. Now, as Rashi notes, what basically the Gemara does not like is that assumption that, in other words, Moshe being 10 amas tall, that's a mesorah. That's a tradition. But all the Levim being 10 amas tall, the Gemara, that was an assumption, and the Gemara perhaps does not agree to that. So, the Amar Mar Aron Tishav Kaparos Tefa Charei Kan Yud. So now, if we turn to the Aron, you see the Aron is a much smaller item. The Aron is only 10 tefachim from top to bottom, vertical height of 10 tefachim. Ugemir de Choltuna de Midle Bemotos Toto de Lel Treitosa Milara. And the Gemara here says, now this is going to be very simple. We're carrying the Aron, and again, I'm carrying the Aron on poles, and the assumption is that whenever I carry an Aron, or again, for anything for that matter, a third of it is above my head and two-thirds of it is below. And that now means that the Levim are carrying the Aron, and let's put the Levim at the average height of 3 amos. It's fine. But the Aron itself is only 10 tefachim. And 3 of those tefachim are above their head. 7 of those tefachim, or 6 2/3 if you want to be more precise, are below. But that's 6 2/3 tefachim, that still leaves a lot of room from the bottom of the Aron to the ground. And still that's considered carrying. And again, another proof that even when the item is suspended above 10 tefachim, it's still considered carrying. V'ligmar mi Moshe. Now the Gemara itself expresses the question, why don't we assume that all Levim are tall like Moshe? Because Moshe could have been a total outlier. We have a general principle that Shechina Shara on someone who's smart, strong, wealthy, and tall. Amar Rav, Mishum Rabbi Chia. Okay, that ends that discussion. So again, the point that the Gemara just made, it was complex in terms of putting together all the pieces of information, is that even when you're carrying an item, and even if the item itself is above 10 tefachim, that is still considered carrying in a Rosh Hashanah
Harabim. They say he was like the Egyptians. Were the Egyptians 5'10 tall too? Because he was in the house of
Pharaoh. I don't know. Okay. Next. Amar Rav Mishum Rabbi Chiya Motzi Masur B'Shabbos Al Rosho Chayev Chata Shekein Anshei Hutzal Osin Kein. Everyone, I'm sure, has a picture of the Bedouin tribes carrying on their head. Okay, and somehow they perfected. Right, you see this. Now, right, National Geographic. You see it all the time. Yeah, correct. I mean, my travels have taken me to the far reaches of Argentina, but that's, you know, I've not visited the continent of Africa. So the anyway, but Anshei Hutzal do this, and so therefore it's normal. And this is a great discussion of the Gemara. V'anche hutzel ruba da'ama? Well, what, they're not representative. Meaning they're a small segment of the population. Yes, they carry things on their head, but so what? They don't represent normal practice. Eliyid ma'achid ma'amarav mishum Rabbi Chiyachem ibnei hutsa shotzi masuwa rasho b'shabbos chayev shekem b'nei ira nosen kain. Okay, so the Gemara says, you're right. They're not going to translate into what's considered normal practice for the world. But if you're a member of the city of Hutzal, and you're carrying something on your head, well, in the Hutzal, that's how they do it. And therefore, you should be chayev. And here the Gemara says, no. The Gemara says, okay, but still, it's such an unusual way to do something. So even in Hutzal, it's not regarded. Eliyidma hachiyidma amotzi masuwa rasho pater. The imtim salomar anche hutzal osin kain batla daitan eitzel kol adam. The Gemara's conclusion, what a strange conclusion of the Gemara, is that even if you have an entire community who behaves in a certain way, if this is not normative practice, so then it's not registered. Even for that town who practices in that certain way, it's still not considered normative. And so therefore, the Gemara here really it gives us an unbelievable insight into what's considered normative practice, and even entire community. I don't know enough information about how big Hutzal was, how much, you know, what they were relative to the rest of Google. The population, and I don't think Google will help me as well. It could be wrong, but anyway, if Aaron were here, by the way, he'd look it up. You know that.
Yeah, for sure. So back in the first paragraph, we had a focus between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda about the carpenters who carry the things down their ears and all those.
Right,
things.
Right.
And one said yes.
Right, and also let's go right, right, and we can even go back to yesterday's daf where the Gemara talked about how if you're machshiv one seed, right. So the Gemara says we're not mevatel daito it's a kolada. And I'll go back to what I said yesterday. I don't know if I'm right about this. But in other words, there are certain things which are so on the fringe, they're so on the periphery. Right, to write two more than two standard deviations from the norm. So the Gemara says, meaning that's just so, it's such an outlier. But I guess there are certain things which are not within the norm, not totally outside the norm. Let's say one to two standard deviations from the norm. If I could speak statistically. So the Gemara says that's something where I guess we can have a discussion about. But Anshei Hutzal, the Gemara is basically saying they're really an outlier. Hamiskavin lahotzi lafanav uvalo la'acharav pater. Okay? This Mishnah that we'll start today, I don't think we're going to finish it, but my intent is that I want it to carry something in front of me. So in other words, right, I take an item and I basically stick it in my belt in front of me. And my belt happens to be pretty tight around my waist right now, but that's not a problem with my belt. So the and what happens is that it kind of slides to the back. So the Mishnah says you're not going to be chayv, meaning while I'm walking, it kind of slides to the back. You're going to be potter. La'acharav uvalo lefanav chayv. But interestingly enough, if I put the item in my back and then as I'm walking it slides to the front, I'm going to be chayv. Okay, we'll explain that better in just a moment. Now, when it comes to a woman, so if she inserts something in her sinar, okay, whatever it is, it's a skirt, whatever it is. The point being is that there's no front, there's no back, meaning it kind of there's maneuverability on this particular item of clothing, right? Okay, again, I don't know, but the point being is that really front and back are not germane to that article of clothing, and so therefore, you're going to be chayiv of whether it starts in the front, ends in the back, starts in the back and ends in the front. Rav Yehuda Omer Af Mekabli Pitkin. And Rav Yehuda says we could say the same thing about the UPS guy. Now, I say UPS guy, all right, I don't know, I don't really mean the UPS guy, but I mean basically the mailman who's schlepping whatever he's schlepping. And Rashi describes it as he's a messenger of the king and he's running. So because he's running, so it's always assumed that the item is going to be in its total state of flux, starting in the front, ending in the back, starting in the back, ending in the front. And much like the woman with her sinar, so this courier, who's going to always have this item in a state of flux, is going to be chayv regardless of where it started and where it ended. Now, the Gemara's discussion deals with our first case in the Mishnah. Maishna lafan of avala lachar of depater, de lo isavin machshavasa, lachar of avala lafan of nami, ha lo isavin machshavasa. I don't get the Mishnah. says the Gemara. Because essentially, look, if I start something in the front and it ends in the back, in other words, that was my intent. And remember, on Shabbos, in order to be liable, you have to have done an act that conforms to your intent. Malachis Machshevas. Good. So the Gemara says, isn't it true that if I put in my back and then it kind of creeps around to my front, I also didn't intend that to happen, and so there also shouldn't be a Shabbos liability, because once again, Malachis Machshevas. So I don't understand the Mishnah. So Amar Rav Elazar, Tavra, Misha Shanazu, Lo Shanazu. So the Gemara's first response, Rav Elazar's response is, okay, it's a difficult Mishnah. You're going to have to break the Mishnah up into two parts. The one who learned the first part of the Mishnah did not learn the second half of the Mishnah, and vice versa. Amar Rav, O my Kusha. And Rav says, no. That's too radical a position. It's way too extreme. Let's do it this way. Dilma Lafanu Vavala Lach, Rav Hainu, Taima Departed, Ninskav Lishmir Ma'ula, the Alta Biyadu Shmir Pechusa. La'achra vavala lefana v'haynu time d'chayv d'nskav l'shmir p'chus v'al t'biyado shmira ma'ula. It's very simple, says Rava. When I start with something in the back, meaning, to me, I don't need a lot of shmira. It's clear because I put the item in behind me, so, someone comes and wants to try to pickpocket me, I'm basically saying, go ahead, be my guest. It's behind me. And then if it creeps to the front of me, so that is extra shmira. Well, what's bad about extra shmira? Nothing's bad about extra shmira. So in other words, I was interested in holding the item with a little bit of shmira, and then it was given more shmira? Fine. But when I put the item in front of me, and I wanted that extra shmira, and then it creeps behind me as I'm walking, so now it's got now inferior shmira, that's why the Mishnah says you're not going to be chayav, because it downgraded in shmira. And Rava says that's how you understand the Mishnah.
We learned that in the previous
case
when something shrinks.
Right, correct. So, halachra v'alachra chayv emasev l'achra v'alafan. I'm sorry, what just happened? So, elamai kushya diyukid emasnitzin kasha. I'll tell you the problem. The problem is our Mishnah, because hamiskav l'hotz l'afan v'alachra pater halachra v'alachra chayv. What if, from our Mishnah, it starts in the back and it ends in the back? Sounds like I'd be chayv. I'll tell you the problem. The problem is, move on in the Mishnah. If it starts in the back and it works its way to the front, I'm going to be chayav. And the Gemara reads into that part of the Mishnah, well, if I start in the back and ends in the back, I'm going to be exempt. So to this, I'm Rav Elazar Tavra Misha Shanazu, Lo Shanazu. So again, Rav Elazar is going to take out his scissors and he's going to cut the Mishnah up. I'm Rav Ashi, my kushya dimma lo mi bai kamar. Again, Rav Ashi says, to me this is not a problem. Lo mi bai l'ach ravala l'ach rav dechayev d'ita v'machshavaso ela afilu l'ach ravala fanav istarich lay. If it starts in the back and ends in the back, obviously that's what I intended. If it starts in the back and moves to the front, that's a bigger chiddush. Sagadat chamina hov lo isav v'machshavaso lo lechayev. Kamash malan didis kayev l'shmir p'chusav al tabiyad l'shmir ma'ula dechayev. So the Gemara says the point of our Mishnah is that if it starts in the back, it moves to the front, where now it has improved in shmira, so for sure I'm going to be chayev, and the shmira only got better. Okay, so we started this morning finishing up the topic of Eged Klishme Eged. Our Mishnah is of the clear position. No. Our Mishnah is not of a clear position. Machlok is Rav Yochanan and Chizkiya. Machlok is between Abai and Rava, whether Eged Klishmei Eged. The conclusion of the Gemara seems to be Eged Klishmei Eged, that whatever is in the Kli unifies and turns into a single entity. We then moved on to the Mishnah of that in order to Chayva and the Malach of Atzai, you have to carry in a usual manner. We described in our Mishnah four different methods of usual manner: right hand, left hand, shoulder, or lap. Even if I carry an item suspended above 10 tefachim, I'm going to be chayav. We learned that from either analyzing Moshe or the Levim carrying the Aron. And then we moved on to discussion of what if the item moves in transit from the front to the back, I'd be potter. From the back to the front, I'd be chayav. Okay, stop over here to continue to refer Shlema. Rabbi Yamin Zeva Cohen, Ben Shemar Rivka, Rabbi Chanan Ben Akash Omer. Ratzah Kosh Baruch Hu Zak Shal Kich Achir Ben Torah Mitzvah Shenem Arnecha Fitzim Antiko Yagdil to Rabbi Adir.